Hi, I'm Matt Stone. You're listening to Crucial Conversations, a series of five stories of grassroots leadership by people in the disability sector in Queensland. In a career spanning over three decades, Leanne Burke has worked in a range of settings to support people with disability. Guided by the example of her first teacher, her big sister Maria, Leanne was committed to creating the best life for the people she worked with. Over time, she also came to see how serving people in groups compromised their capacity to achieve a good life. In this fourth episode of the series, we hear how, since the early 90s, Leanne has worked in and established a number of small, personalised service arrangements. In sharing what she's learnt, Leanne challenges many common assumptions of how to serve people well and what leadership looks like.
My name's Leanne Burke. I have always worked in the disability sector, so I guess that's why I'm still here today. I went straight from school to a course called residential care that was established around the movement of disability services from a medical model to a residential care model. My mother actually had done the course before me. For me, I don't remember thinking about it that much. It was just, I have to do something when I finish school. But the story goes back further than that, though, because my sister had an intellectual disability. Maria's born in 1959. I was born in 1962. We were born in Cunnamulla. My brother was in between. And there was nothing, no support for Maria in Cunnamulla, and except my grandfather, my mother's father, was really, he would come every day and drive, take Maria for a drive in his truck. And when he died, I think for Mum that was her main support gone. So I think they went and searched, thinking that Dad was from Brisbane, would possibly be more options for him, for Maria in Brisbane, but that didn't really pan out. We moved from Cunnamulla to Brisbane, and I only know through being told stories because I was three. Maria would have been six going on seven, and we moved with the thought that there would be more opportunities for Maria in Brisbane. Dad was from there, so it made sense that way as well. But in reality, there wasn't really much in Brisbane for Maria except a diagnosis. So in her early teenage years, she had the opportunity to attend a school, but unfortunately it was on the grounds of a large institution, and the choice had to be made for her to go there was that she actually had to live on site to attend the school. So she went to live there Monday to Friday and came home on the weekends, basically. None of those children living there would have had any education prior to that. I still remember men in white uniforms with lots of keys and the noise of that, and having to open several doors to get through to my sister, who lived with me and shared my bedroom. So, you know, that's quite weird and hard to understand why that would be, yeah. So anyway, we had a very strange upbringing, I would say. She learnt very quickly the less conspicuous you are, the safer you're probably going to be. And she started to become reserved and become passive. We'd hear, oh, Maria's no trouble. And we'd go, yes, she is. You know, Maria is very dynamic and it's always on the go. And for someone to say to us, Maria's quiet, she's no trouble to look after, we just go, that's not the right relationship. She's not showing her true self to people.
I'm happy with chopsticks.
At home, Maria ruled the roost, but she did what she wanted to do. Whoever gets it. She ran with the pack of kids that lived in the street. But she was also, I think, always a lot smarter than people gave her credit for. You know, she couldn't speak, but she didn't need to speak to really communicate with all of us. We all knew what was pretty much was going on. And if we didn't, she let us know how cranky she was about it. She is active, so she never just sat. She was always on the move, always wanting to do something. If you wanted to sit and watch TV and she wanted you to do something with her, there's no way you'd get away with it, because she'd just sit there and pull my finger back till it hurt for me to scream at her and go, "Don't do that," or whatever. When school finished, you know, the age of 16 or 17, she came back and once again entered a time where there was no support. So she was just home for a couple of years until an activity therapy centre opened in a nearby suburb, and then she had a place to go during the day. She really liked the bus or taxi ride there and back. And she enjoyed some of the activities, but it really wasn't about allowing Maria to be who Maria is. You know, who Maria was who she was with family and friends. After the course was finished, I actually was employed. It was called Basil Stafford Training Centre. It was a place on top of the hill at Wacol where people lived in ward-type accommodation. It was run under the health department as a subsidiary, I guess, of Wollaston Park Psychiatric Hospital. I didn't actually work at Basil Stafford Centre. I worked with people who lived there. There was a day program. It was called Woodstock. And it was created to be a link for people living at Basil Stafford Centre to accessing the community. And people started to move out of Basil Stafford.
Were you okay?
So Woodstock was a place where people could come, they could start doing stuff in the community. It was a house up for demolition, so we could do anything to it. But as well, it was a safe place for people to come back to if they weren't coping well with whatever was happening around them. I was a new graduate and just having fun, really, with everybody. But there was, you know, a filmmaker as part of the team and people who were really resourceful at carpentry. And, you know, so there was a great bunch of people who had all been through pretty much the same course. People would come. There was a range of choices offered for each day, from lawn mowing to going to the markets to purchase fruit and vegetables to on sale to doing some craft. We had meetings. People got to choose what activity they were going to do that day and who with, and that was my job from there. So people were living in places like Basil Stafford Centre, but being able to walk down the hill, jump on the train at Wacol, get to Toowong, walk up the hill. Because there was still staff that had transitioned from the old system and very much liked to control, some with military precision, and Woodstock staff kind of antagonised people. We were a bit happy-go-lucky and we took lots of risks. We got away with lots of things that, you know, today we would be under much more scrutiny. I did that job for 5 years, and the writing was on the wall that things were changing. There was very little kind of recognition that this worked because of all of the elements that were required in the person's life. The organisations that were providing day services weren't actually coming at it from an individual's perspective. More, we provide a program, and if, you know, you do this on Mondays, this on Tuesdays, this on Wednesdays, and there were people who had a lot of history of living in settings that were quite violent and often acted violently. If their back was up against the wall, The Disability Services Act was being written. The Commonwealth was going to start funding disability services. The services like Woodstock were going to cease being offered by the Queensland State Government because they saw that those kind of services should be funded under this new Disability Services Act. So I left. Maria did move out of home in her late 20s, and the house was actually, it was initiative of the Western Deanery of the Catholic Church, and it had been International Year of Person with Disability, and so they had said, well, we want to do something. So it was, they set it up with a young nun, Bridget, who liked to live an alternative lifestyle, so didn't have the appearance of a nun to look at. So she pretty much established it initially as a intentional community, so invited young people to come live there in the household and people without disability. Some received some income and some were just there to live. And Maria was the first person with a disability to move in. Maria's household was people used to be able to come and go. A couple of other people moved into the house. The families all connected, and it seemed like a really good opportunity for Maria at the time, and the culture was created by Bridget. After a while, Bridget moved out and another nun moved in, and the culture just changed overnight. It went from a place with openness to a place with rules. Dad was a bit of a barfly at the RSL. So he used to often just swing by after work, beep the horn, Maria'd run out, they'd go off to the pub, you know. And Maria just loved hanging out with these fellas that used to sit at the bar, and then Dad would drop her off afterwards. And anyway, it became a battle because they could not cope with the fact that he did not come in and sign her out, basically. It was not acceptable for him to just beep the horn for Maria to go with him. So they wanted him to park the car, get out, come in, you know, do the formal handover and go. And my father was not that kind of man. He would rather endure the battle and do it twice as often just to annoy them. We seem to have the knack of taking something that's really good and precious and turning it into an accountable system. I know what the worst is like, and that doesn't have to be a large institution. That can be a group of one, you know, can be run in a very institutionalised way. So when somebody tries to impose some rules that it seemed to me to be really restrictive, I will always go to look at the how do you find another way of doing that.
This series is brought to you by CRU, the Community Resource Unit. CRU exists to create positive change so that people with disability will be welcomed, respected and appreciated in their communities. For more information, please visit our website at cru.org.au.
I went to work for the non-government sector for the first time. A house was called a respite house, and people used to come and stay for short stays. So to have people come and stay for a weekend, a week, generally not longer than that, but sometimes a little bit longer. And from, you know, 1 or 2 year olds to 50, 60 year olds. So that was created on the notion that families needed respite. And it was one of the funded programs in the early days of the Disability Services Act. I was only 26 or 27 when I started working there. I was employed as the coordinator. So I was quite some younger than a lot of the people who worked there. I guess at first I kind of once again thought, oh, I'm working in a place where people are coming together. But I guess we tried to make the most of it, and we got to realise that we should be inviting people to come of similar age at the same time rather than, you know, we recognised that there was some young women who went to school together, and by inviting them to come and stay at the same time, they got to hang out together teenagers and could get up to mischief and have some fun. So we kind of created a place then that gave some kind of opportunity to test out what it was like to live out of home, even though we didn't want to really kind of promote the moving out of home means living in a group situation. So I was there for about 5 years, and, you know, it was, by the time I left there, I was more than convinced that any kind of group model always compromised the individual. So you could talk about choice and how much you provide and meeting the guidelines of the funding and how we created those opportunities for people to come together. And at the end of the day, we were always compromising somebody over somebody else. You can see the potential in people to live properly in their own home, spend time on their own, to not have people around all the time. But a family might think, no, my son or daughter needs somebody there 24 hours a day, otherwise they won't be safe. And to more extreme, somebody paid to be there to be safe, where we would try to build in that the more people have in their lives that aren't paid to be there, the safer they're going to be. And there will be workers that come promoting themselves as the safety net and stuff, but workers will always leave. There's more likelihood that family and friends will hang around for the long term. This is now the early 90s, and the words of the day were family support and community living. But the notion of family support kind of started up, and there was a Queensland Parents of People with Disability. It was called QPPD, most people knew it as. They had just done a project where they'd travelled around the state of Queensland and interviewed a whole lot of families about what was important about home, education, work, and came back with a kind of this is the way forward. And that had a lot of influence. And a group of families were meeting in the southwestern suburbs of Brisbane with the notion of setting up a small service. Homes West was a declared family-led organisation that had a clear aim to assist people to establish a home of their own, not a shared home, just a home of their own. And it had the foundations that everybody's life had core elements to it, but each looked different. So there was a home, there was a place in the community, there was family, there was friends, there was meaningful activity, there was, you know, a range of things. And I think they got 40 hours a week of support for three people and funding for a part-time coordinator. Anyway, I applied and got the position as the coordinator. And at that point, there was five families who had said, I want to have Homes West work with me to assist my son or daughter to establish a home of their own in their own community. Trying to look at where would the person want to live? What does home look like? What does it feel like? What is, you know, so that was the foundation work prior to people moving out, was just really making sure that people were part of that community before they actually lived there. Homes West tried to bring whole families with it. It did struggle with that because quite often it was parents at the table and more often mothers. Homes West was supported by Crew. Anne Cross was the director at the time, and she attended all the early committee meetings, and Crew was very generous in supporting the development of it. And so these families created this organisation. They had experience of other. So they had experience of special school. Some had experience of segregated, like group home, and it had been a not good experience. So they kind of knew more about what they didn't want than what they wanted, but gave over a lot of trust to me, I guess, and the people that they employed to be the support workers to help their son or daughter explore their community and create their own lives. Maria, she was always the nurturer. She always, she would have to fix my clothes and tidy my hair and, you know, look me up and down if I'd bought something new. And I'd go shopping with her and I'd go in and try something on and I'd come out and she'd look at me down and she'd just go like that. She'd just shake her head just ever so subtly and I'd go, okay. So I trusted her fashion sense. I'd worked with the initial five people who were a little bit older, probably mid-20s to mid-30s or something like that. And then Mina Ward came along and she was just finishing school. And at the time there was a funding program called Moving Ahead. And it was money to assist people when leaving school to think about what they're going to do next. At that stage, she just finished school. Most people would have taken that money and said, I'm going to employ a worker to help me take me out during the day and we'll explore my interests. But from the minute that Mina heard that this money was called Moving Ahead, she called it Moving Out Money. And so Mina decided that she wanted to move out of home on her 19th birthday and she was going to use that money to do that. As the coordinator of Homes West, I was invited to a meeting where they presented me with Mina wants to use her moving ahead money as moving out money and she wants to move out on 19th birthday. What do you think? And I guess I said something like, well, we can have a go. You know, it could be possible. So all I did was go, didn't say no. So they did the rest, really. So that created an ambition and she succeeded, Mina succeeded. I think she had her 19th birthday in her own place. I went overseas again after I left Homes West and I came back not sure what I was going to do. I heard that Lifestyle Options was needing a position they called a resource worker or something like that. Lifestyle Options was the user-led, people with disability-run organisation. So the people that used the service were the management committee. A couple of the people at Lifestyle Options were represented by family members, but where possible, would be present themselves as well. They had a full-time coordinator, so I was a secondary position there. I had less responsibility, so more freedom to engage and do more creative things, I think. So it was pretty much they were their own bosses and we were just there to assist in the management of that as it was required. It was very clear that the person was their own boss and set their own rules and there was some assistance in the management functions. And I was had the sense I wasn't going to be there for a long time, but it ended up being 5 years. So when we made the final decision for Maria to move, my parents purchased a unit for her in a gated community with, you know, that had nice facilities and things in it. We were allowed to employ the staff because there was no further compromising of Maria having to share her support with other people. And we selected people who we thought would be a good influence, had some shared interests. We had to branch out and actually take the leap into self-direction if we were truly going to make this about Maria. So we engaged a lot more people who we thought would encourage, value their roles in Maria's life, but also value the life of community and welcoming people in and truly enable Maria to be very flexible in how they worked. So she found her people. She found people that really, really liked her and welcomed her into groups. Went to art classes and joined a choir. It was not ever, oh, Maria can't do this. They made a way for her to be involved. She wanted us to be less her support workers. She was always very happy to go and spend the weekends at Mum and Dad's when she used to come up from Brisbane, and it was almost an expectation. But she refused to sleep over at Mum and Dad's anymore. She always wanted to go home. And she was listened to and respected. Her home became her home. It's a reflection of who she is and was. Success breeds success. So if you can get some strategies in place and see that, oh, okay, that worked. And then I always think the best thing that happens is if you've nagged somebody for a long time with an idea and they keep pushing you away, that one day they say to you, I've got this great idea. And it's the idea that you've been promoting for some time. You finally know they own it. As long as you know that that's going to be a turning point for something good to happen for somebody. I've been here now at Staffing Options for 12 years. Staffing Options is a proprietary limited company, and Carol Brosey, she started it as an agency, a temp agency for disability support workers and aged care workers who might be needed in a range of settings. I was in the mindset that I had worked in two small niche organisations that didn't want to get any bigger. So I saw a lot of people knocking on the door that they wanted something similar. There was a group of advocates, families and other committed people who wanted to start a new organisation, but they didn't want to incorporate. They didn't want to have the responsibility for running the organisation. They just wanted to operate as a collective. They had researched some other small initiatives around Australia and found something in Melbourne, which was like a hosting arrangement. So a group of families had gone to a larger traditional service and said, we want to do our own thing and we want it to look like this, but we would like you to hold our funding. Most of the people involved had had really horrible experiences in segregated care and knew that they weren't going back to it. Staffing Options had been asked to hold their funding grants, and at the end of the day, they approached Staffing Options to be the host, their host provider. I said to Carol, if you can do a host relationship with a collective, we could just do a host relationship one person at a time. We would say, we will do the payroll, pay the tax, pay the super, all of those kind of things. But in terms of managing what the workers do and how they do it, that's your role. And I think we just started doubling every year. So we kind of like started with 3 and then became 6 and then became 12. And then I think kind of we ended up about 125. Leadership means using what you know to assist people where they might need that help. It's a term of often I've struggled with forever and a day. And leadership is coming from behind, making sure that people have what they need, but not saying this is the way to go. I don't know. It's something. I just think I'm someone that utilises the experience and knowledge that I've gained through working with people over many years and have a sense of confidence of what's possible and giving other people confidence to do that. So that people come with the challenging situations and we think and talk about how we can reverse that or flip that or think about it differently or put the safeguards in place. I think because I've had the experiences that I've had and gained the knowledge that I've got, that I'm able to think about that next step. I try not to do things that take us back into the old world, but I don't have to over-invest in the lives of people anymore, because I just have this sense that it's their lives, and any kind of dependency we can create with people isn't going to let them get on with, you know, their own thing. me going into this work and doing that, while there is that connection there, I never could see Maria as in that position with me. She was my sister, pure and simple. Knowing how much assistance she needed, how much freedom she had, and how much trust she had in and confidence she had to do her own thing, if she can do it, anybody can do it.
This podcast was funded by the Anne Cross Leadership Initiative, established in 2017 to honour the contribution of Anne Cross to Uniting Care Queensland during her years as the Chief Executive Officer. This partnership between Uniting Care and CRU aims to contribute to the development of strong, principled leadership amongst people with disability and families throughout Queensland. For more information, please visit our website at cru.org.au. We'd love to hear your feedback on CRU's Facebook page, or send us an email via crew@crew.org.au.